I'll tape. Good. You taping right now? All right.
From Seattle, the Earth on the Air Radio Works presents Earth on the Air.
That's how it is out here.
As Americans grow increasingly alienated from the political process, many quite ordinary citizens are struggling to reclaim democracy.
During the next half hour, Earth on the Air's independent contributors get a sampling of ideas and suggestions for how we all can participate more fully and creatively.
For example, maybe we should revive the ancient practice of socially shunning those leaders we believe are doing harm.
Jello Biafra says monkey wrenching the New World Order might do some good and will at least be a lot of fun.
A gay man runs for president as a Republican to badger the party into addressing some of the issues he says it avoids.
Thoughts from the streets, from protesters, and more.
First, a quick reminder of just how alienated from government some of us feel.
So how do you feel about the present government?
Well, the present government is faulty, inefficient, decadent, and hedonistic, and I personally think that even I could run this country better.
The immovability of it is just sad.
I think there's no justice in the government at all, you know, just for them, you know, they work around the people, you know.
This is no longer a democracy. This is a plutocracy. This is a country run by money and by the people who have money.
Right now, I think the present government really sucks.
I think the government at the federal level sucks.
I think they're a bunch of crooks.
Hands up those of you who think you live in a true democracy. Yeah, none of you. You all know.
I really think our present system is a bankrupt. I do believe we just simply have to acknowledge that and let it go.
We've got to organize and fight back all the time.
I think this is genuinely a revolutionary time.
Maybe a little more subtle than a revolution, but yeah, close to that.
Revolutions come in all sizes, shapes, and figures.
And I don't think revolution necessarily means violence, but there will be a revolution.
Unless you change your ways and take your country back from the corporations who are run by people who are governed by wealth, power, and greed, the world won't survive. And that's my diagnosis. And the cure is for you to have a revolution.
Helen Caldicott, co-founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Now, how are you going to do it, I wonder? Well, the Russians did it, didn't they? The Hungarians did it, the Czechoslovakians did it, the Yugoslavs did it. If they did it, can you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, when are you going to take over the White House? And I'm serious, because the people running for president now do not represent you.
Do you partake in public demonstrations?
It's not my thing. I don't go to rallies. It's not my thing.
I didn't get the chance. We were working, but when they were having the big demonstration down there, I was considering to go.
Do you think that democracy should be hard work or easy?
I don't think we should have a struggle with anything.
Well, my interests are in more doing things that make me feel good.
Do you vote?
Nope.
No.
How come?
Just don't.
You ever get into political conversations with your friends and peers, family?
I try to stay out of it.
Do you go to town meetings?
No, I watch that particular television show, Town Meeting, once in a while.
I don't like what's going on. I don't feel I have time to do anything about it. I'm not proud of it, but I'm honest.
You could say vote, you could say participate in politics, but I think the people with the money are pulling the strings, and regardless of what we do, how we vote, then it still won't make a difference. Still won't change.
I don't have the time. I'm trying to survive myself for myself and my family, and unfortunately I'm one of those people who don't really think that I could make the difference.
There are a lot of people who haven't given up, of course, who believe that even a small group with a large passion can ignite change, can contribute something significant to, if not revolution, then evolution. Meet Stephen Michael. He's running for president.
Bush and Quayle belong in jail. Bush and Quayle belong in jail.
Now, you might not think he sounds like a very dignified candidate, but he's not running to gain respect as a politician. He's passionate enough about the issues that affect him most directly, such as gay and lesbian rights or AIDS research, that he's willing to try just about anything to move them further into the public arena. Michael, joined by his campaign manager, a member of the activist group ACT UP, paid a visit to the Republican headquarters in Seattle. Since they had collected enough signatures to get on the Republican ballot in Washington, they felt they should be welcomed at the GOP office as a legitimate party contender. But the volunteer inside wouldn't unlock the door.
Are you guys afraid? Come on. Come on, this is a candidate. I'm on the ballot, you're not. I think I have a right to get in here.
The purpose of what our campaign is that we're trying to focus the attention of the voters in this state and educate them as well as the Republican Party. What we've got to do is we've got to force the issues of AIDS and gay and lesbian rights and choice issues inside the Republican Party, and that's what we're going to do. We fully intend to get the necessary votes to get delegates inside the Republican convention, and we're going to force the issues of AIDS, health care, and we're going to be in their face.
So you guys going to close the doors? What's going to happen when we win the primary here?
By running as a Republican, Steve Michael is rebelling and using the political system to do it. Because he's an official candidate, he's able to buy TV ad time, and by law, his commercials cannot be censored. A handy law for Michael, who's eager to get hard-hitting, safe sex messages across the airwaves.
Use a condom with a water-based lubricant every time you have sex. Send a message to George Bush. AIDS won't wait. Vote Steve Michael on the Republican ballot on May 19th.
Although he won't sign an oath of loyalty to the party, he insists he's not anti-Republican. He's just mad at contemporary GOP leaders.
I submit that they're not the real Republicans, and that I am the real Republican based on the spirit of the past of the Republican Party, based on the fact that the Republicans were the original party of civil rights. They were the original party advocating limited government in the sense that states didn't have these magical rights and powers to control people's bodies. I'm much more of an environmentalist along the lines of the people that founded the national parks and the national Forest Service, and I'm the moral candidate because I'm fighting for a cure for AIDS. I'm talking about health care reform. We have one person die every 5 minutes of this country of complications resulting from AIDS, and these people ignore it. They have clearly indicated their disdain for lifestyles that are different from theirs.
Eventually, after plenty of hollering, a Republican staffer does open the door. And Michael is true to the confrontational activist style that ACT UP members have become infamous for.
Who are you?
I just work here.
Oh, you do? Well, have you heard of Steve Michael, who's running for president?
Yes, I know.
Well, he's running, he's
You're
a Republican.
Yes,
that's right, he's a Republican.
Mm, that's
so
great.
I think he has some rights to come in here, don't you?
Well, the office is closed right now. We're not open for business right now.
That's odd, because as I understand it, you're open from 9 to 8. Well, that's what you say when you answer the phone. So you just pick and choose the people that you allow as Republicans?
No, that's not true at all.
Really?
No.
Then why is Steve Michael literature not up there with Bush and Buchanan literature?
Do you have literature?
Yes, we do. We brought it here daily.
Give me some.
Here's some right here.
Okay. Have any more?
Well, that's what we'll make sure you put that up before we waste it. You know, we're not, you know, running around on Air Force One wasting taxpayers' money on our campaign. We're running on a tight budget. We're out there trying to campaign to save lives, and then you folks just
that's
go ahead and lock the door.
That's what we feel, too, that we should be working to save lives.
And why is it, then, that the president refuses to enforce the National Commission on AIDS report? Why has he ignored that?
I have no idea. I've never read the report. I don't know anything much about it.
Really? Well, George Bush cutting $300 million from the AIDS research
budget. Why don't you ask him?
Well, we get the same response from George Bush that we get from everybody, from top to bottom on this party.
Locked doors.
Close the doors on everyone.
Well, we hope we get your vote on May 19th.
Thank you very much for stopping by.
Thank you.
In the primary, Steve and Michael garnered 3% of the Republican vote. not enough to earn a delegate spot at the convention, but his campaign for president was successful in bringing his concerns a little further out of the closet.
You might not think that fringe efforts like Stephen Michaels have much impact. That's where you're wrong, says Elena Morris, a public speaker on transformational leadership. Morris says, target the issues that you really care about, and you'll probably be doing some good. As an example, she tells the story of Cindy Leitner, who founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Cindy Leitner started MAD, you know, after her daughter was killed by a drunk driver. And she just became so personally agitated about the fact that this drunk driver was going to basically get off with a slap on the wrist after he'd killed her daughter, that she went on a one-woman crusade, and she organized groups. She must have been an organizing genius, because she got organizations going in every state in a matter of a couple of years, and she trained these people to to harass the legislators, to just hound them, and they were just barraged by telephone calls and so forth, so that she got the laws in every state changed in a matter of 5 years. I mean, people say that change is slow and must be done carefully and deliberately. She showed that you could take a basic, intrinsic kind of thought, and she got that whole thing changed in a matter of 5 years, to where we said, no, you don't have a right to drink and get in the car. No, you don't have that right. And so she got that basic belief changed in 5 years and got it through the legislature. I mean, it was incredible.
Occasionally, if you're ready and willing, you just might find yourself in charge of a campaign, an initiative, or a rally. That's what happened to University of Washington student Kevin King. 2 days after the Rodney King verdict was announced, Kevin King, like so many, was astonished by the verdict. He attended a rally on campus and was nudged to the speaker's podium by some friends. So he spoke.
Sooner or later, it's going to be us. It's not Rodney King, it's us, all right? And understand this. When we do have that confrontation, as I said before, don't bow down. Don't let them just take you down.
The crowd, growing by the minute, decided to march off campus toward downtown. Kevin King found his fellow marchers looking to him for guidance, and he somehow was able to take the lead, steering the demonstration down Interstate 5 and facing off several times with groups of police.
While walking down Pine Street, man, we had gotten more people joining us than a little bit. From what was just a little small ragtag group of 100 and so people, swelled up to like 100, 200, 300 people down Pine Street. And it was a lot of power there, it was a lot of togetherness. And I don't care how tired or thirsty or hot it was, man, I felt good. So we're walking and we go to Second Ave. People are joining us. They're coming out of office buildings. They're coming out off of bus stops. They're coming out of stores. They're doing everything and they're just walking with us. So about a block before we get to the federal building, I tell everyone, I say, hey, before we get to the federal building, I want everybody arm in arm to show everyone that we are together on this. So everybody gets arm in arm, and I say, chant to the people, united will never be defeated. And sure enough, they started chanting, and I said, make it loud, because we're coming right up on them. And we start walking, and they're chanting that, and there's already people there. There's probably a couple of hundred there. So at that point, we had a couple of hundred. Boy, by the time we got there, it was just a sea of people. I was so jubilated and filled that when we got there, I jumped up on top of one of these high steps, and everybody kind of gathered, and they were waiting for me to speak again. And I'm going, whoa, what am I to say to these people? In my head, I'm saying this. And I always remember Mother telling me, speak from the heart. So I just tell the people, I say, hey, listen up, people. First of all, I want you to look around. And this is all people of color, baby. We are all together on this. We are all together. Now, give it up for peace. I want everybody to throw up two fingers in the air, peace signs. I seen so many peace signs up there, man. It looked like a forest of peace, just peace everywhere.
There you go.
How can other people find inside of themselves what you found that, that empowers them to take a stand like you did?
It really has to come from inside. It has to come from inside. A gut feeling that says, hey, do what you feel is the right thing. Be involved in the human issue of life. Be involved in being a part of this human race. Not to step back. Deep down inside, you have to know what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong, and you have to be inside. You have to let your inside tell yourself, hey, I'm going to do something.
Dead Kennedys. On lead vocals, Jello Biafra.
I will be scared one day. I will command all of you. Your kids are meditating in school. Your kids are meditating in school. California, over Alice, California, lover.
Biafra is a hero to many alienated young people. He rebels against the status quo, but he's by no means a dropout. In speeches around the country, he tries to convince young people that there's a form of political engagement for every personality.
Get louder and louder and louder. The 90s may not be pleasant, but they sure as hell won't be boring. And hang on to your spirit and your dignity by having a little bit of fun each day. Monkey wrenching the new world order. Pranks, sabotage, now more than ever. In the office, at the savings and loan. Doesn't have to be violent either. One of my favorites recently was when the bombs first started dropping and we were all in the streets of San Francisco. People were really happy. I'd never seen so many people being happy and getting along, not since the 49ers won the Super Bowl the first time. Anyway, there was this flyer up saying, General Strike tomorrow to protest the New World Order and protest the bombing of Iraq. And it listed as sponsors people like Joe Montana, Bill Graham, Jerry Garcia, Dianne Feinstein. And so consequently, the networks got a hold of this and began phoning up people like Joe Montana and Dianne Feinstein. Hey, wait a minute, what are you doing supporting a general strike? Me? I wasn't supporting a general strike. Their phones rang all day. And so then they had to go on network TV. The reporters did saying, Dianne Feinstein and Joe Montana deny supporting a general strike that was posted around town, thus introducing into the living rooms of primetime news viewers the concept and possibility of general strike. Another fun one was some people in Fort Worth, Texas, put up some flyers saying, to protest the war on such and such a date in a central part of the downtown business district, we will kill our pets. So they called out all these cops, all these reserve cops, all these people took time off of work, curious, is this really going to happen? Huge crowd assembles, all these people wasting valuable company work time standing around waiting for a pet slaughter that never occurred. So don't let New World Order and the conservatives or the religious right tell you that resistance isn't fun, and don't let the farty old side of the left tell you it's just a grim struggle. No, resistance is a lot of fun. Protests are celebrations if you do them right.
Is it subversive to show such obvious disdain for government policies, for the media, for our leaders? Political critic Michael Parenti tells audiences on his lecture circuit that a healthy distrust means a healthy democracy.
I had a student at George Mason University in Virginia where I was talking about a month ago. He said, well, I differ with you because I have faith in the president. I said, you have faith in the president? You mean you go like this to his picture every day? I said, you got to have faith in Jesus or in the Virgin Mother Mary or in Buddha or Muhammad. But the essence of democracy is that you don't have faith. Democracy is not about faith and trust. Democracy is about distrust. Democracy is about accountability, exposure, investigation, election, challenge. Democracy says we don't trust you. When we trust you, you give us the SNL. When we trust you, you destroy our environment. When we trust you, you poison our consumer products. When we trust you, you do everything. You give it to us up one side, down the other, and we don't trust you.
Leadership expert Elena Morris says our distrust of government has managed to creep into every branch, even the pristine chambers where politics is not supposed to intrude.
I hear women all the time just saying the Supreme Court is now only to be disrespected. And I personally, you know, have no respect whatsoever. And so I just, I'm one of these sort of ordinary women who... If I don't respect it, I'm no anarchist. I'm terribly middle-class ordinary, and I can't see any reason for respecting them.
Morris says we need to rethink our relationships with our leaders. We've gotten into the habit, she says, of expecting them to have lower ethical standards than other members of society. She suggests one approach that may seem radical, but she's quite serious. For those leaders who are not responsive to the community they're supposed to serve, revive the ancient practice of shunning.
If they won't deal with our tax situation, if they won't deal with our health care system, if they won't deal with real educational issues, and if they are partisan game players down there and have used up our tax money by doing nothing, you know, we should all just pretend they don't exist. Give them no social life whatsoever. When they come to a party, walk out. And we've got a lot of power this way. If we just socially have nothing to do, refuse to speak to them, any of these people who refuse to act responsibly with in our leadership positions. And shun employers who pay dirty wages to their women employees. The working poor with no health care benefits, no nothing. It's just a national disgrace that you could work full time in this country and still be desperately poor.
Of course it's the poor, the disenfranchised, the homeless, who do not, as a rule, get adequate representation in the decision-making process. And because they can't compete with big money lobbying interests, sometimes only direct action can bring about real change. In the spring of 1991, a Seattle-based homeless advocacy group called Operation Homestead decided it was time to act. Occupying abandoned apartment buildings is a strategy that's been successfully employed in cities throughout the world.
It's looking pretty good. This room still had the belongings of the person that was here before in it. And this room smelled, and this refrigerator was full of rotting things.
And you've done this in 2 days.
Right, on one day.
One day.
24 hours right about now.
Right about now,
that's when we came in.
Risking arrest, the activists methodically went about their business readying the area and court apartments for habitation by the homeless. Operation Homestead member Sean Chertel describes what happened.
What we did basically was organize a rally, which started with a feed for the homeless and then a tour of six abandoned apartment buildings. And the last apartment building was the Arion Court building. I think it was once the Marion Court building, but the M fell off. We had placed a few informed people in the crowd who raised crowbars at the appropriate time and started the chant, tear down the boards, tear down the boards. And pretty soon you had 150 people yelling, tear down the boards, tear down the boards. These people had no clue that they were about to take over an apartment building until it actually happened. And that's what we did. For 5 days, we cleaned the building, repainted it, got it up to fire code, and then got physically booted out by the cops. But in the end, it was a success because we put the pressure on the landlord. The landlord was just an investor anyway, didn't care about the building, and turned it over to Operation Homestead and gave us a 75-year lease on the land. So within a matter of months now, it'll be reopened for the homeless.
You think democracy should be hard work or easy work?
Oh, it's always hard work, but you have to do it. It's the only way. Either that or fascism.
How often do you go to town meetings?
I go to every town meeting I can find, and they have a million town meetings, and they're all connected. The environment, the social issues, desert storm, urban storm, it's all related.
We need to educate on a grassroots level, and getting the community together for educational purposes is the first way to start community action.
Yeah, I'm working right now full-time as a volunteer on the Peace Trees Projects, where we bring youth from all over the world together to plant trees and do stream restoration work.
I go to rallies and things like that more. The last one was when the Persian Gulf War, and before that some abortion rights marches in Washington.
Do you vote?
Yes.
Do you ever get into political conversations with your friends and peers?
Consistently and excessively. All my friends are politically active.
You ever boycott companies or products that violate your principles?
I boycott companies and people who abuse my principles.
Well, like Coors Beer and stuff.
Coors Beer, some tuna companies.
I don't buy gas from Exxon and
Mitsubishi.
Procter & Gamble.
L'Oreal, because they test on animals.
British Petroleum, another multinational corporation who's just sucking up everything around us.
Do either of you get in political conversations with your friends, family, peers?
Nothing argumentative. A lot of times I'll have confrontations with my father about his political view on things.
You write letters to the editor?
I write some letters to the editor. I try to bring about change in, on as many avenues as I can.
You vote?
You bet. I'd like to see that them attorney buggers would get the hell out of there and put a farmer in there. He'd run it better than them idiots that they got in there.
Do you think democracy should be easy or hard work?
I think we can look to the democratic model in Europe and the emerging democracies, certainly the Russian republics today, to see that it's very hard work. It's easy to let your freedom and democracy slip away from you, and that's what we've done in this country. Freedom not exercised is freedom lost.
It should be hard work. I mean, that's the philosophy. That's what it's based on. It's based on everybody thinking about it, not certain people buying it. It does take a certain amount of personal responsibility to make a government run. If people are not willing to give that, if people are too willing to sit back and watch it, then it can't run. Then it's then it becomes what we have.
What we have.
It doesn't take more than 10% of people who believe in something to be organized to really make something happen. You see, but the old saying, it doesn't. The only thing that is required for evil to flourish is for good to do nothing.
That's the show. Thanks for tuning in.
The next edition of Earth on the Air will explore what people are doing on a global level to reconnect with the political process.
Contributing producers to this program were Ted Jessen, John Loggins, Ted Gates, Marcy Silman, Gordon Black, Martin Munguia, People's Video, Peter Young, and Lowell Harvey.
Don't forget, this is your program too. Send for a copy of our submission guidelines or find out about any of the pieces you heard.
Write us at Earth on the Air, P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington 98145.
That's Earth on the Air, P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington 98145.
Earth on the Air submissions director is Susan Gleason. Our executive director is Craig McDonald. The show is produced and edited by Peter Maloff and Suzanne Tedesco, and engineered by Scott Bergen.
Music was from David Hines, Tony De La Rosa, The Dead Kennedys, Kelvin Kleinman, Blake S. Hughes, and Randy.
Production facilities provided by Jack Straw Productions in Seattle and KSER in Linwood, Washington. We had help from KUOW and KCMU in Seattle.
Partial funding was from the Town Creek Foundation, the Bergen Foundation, and the Seattle Arts Commission.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-800-3145. Mention that you like program number 19. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works, this is Peter Maloff.
And I'm Janice Kane.